The living roots of our work. The herding culture into which we've all been born forces boys to learn to be tough and to disconnect from their natural feelings of gentleness and compassion. The work of herding that evolved between 4,000 and 10,000 years ago is the work of harsh and relentless domination of powerful animals. It requires men capable of performing cruel mutilation, confinement, manipulation, and killing, both of the herd animals who have become valuable commodities and of other potentially predatory animals. Besides this, herders are engaged against other herders for precious land and water for their animals. By owning animals, the old emergent herding cultures, which form the historic foundation and the living core of our culture today, distanced themselves from the natural world and entered into an adversarial relationship with it. These ancient cultures have so much power over us today because we engage in the same core behavior, confining animals and eating foods sourced from these animals. Although we have perhaps made some progress in our treatment of each other over the centuries, our continuing practice of enslaving, torturing, and killing animals has always worked against our being able to make substantial progress. Though we decry the enslaving, exploiting, torturing, and killing of other people in certain circumstances, on a larger scale we still rationalize it and justify it, and it remains undeniably widespread today. In Eternal Treblinka, historian Charles Patterson shows how the parallels between the ways that the old herding cultures abused both animals and humans have continued into the present day. See Chapter 2. Focusing on the rational, democratic culture that became Nazi Germany, he points out the startling similarities between our domination of other people and our domination of animals for food. Adolf Hitler kept on his office wall a framed picture of Henry Ford, the consummate capitalist and racist supremacist, whose assembly lines inspired Hitler's mass extermination mechanism. Ford, in turn, got his assembly line idea from the disassembly lines in the old Chicago slaughterhouses. In Nazi Germany, Jews, communists, homosexuals, the mentally ill, and other, quote, vermin, were treated as food animals, transported from stockyards on cattle cars to concentration camps like modern factory farms, where they might be vivisected before being sent into the same sort of final tunnel that awaits every animal slaughtered for food. Ironically, the term, quote, Holocaust, originally meant, quote, whole burning, and referred to the killing and sacrificing of animals as burnt offerings. The same underlying dynamic is still in place today. We universally condemn supremacism, elitism, and exclusivism for destroying peace and social justice, yet we unquestioningly and even proudly adopt precisely these attitudes when it comes to animals. The lesson is plain. When we harden ourselves to the suffering we inflict on animals in our own interest, and justify it by proclaiming our superiority or specialness, it is but a short and unavoidable step to justifying and inflicting the same kind of suffering on other humans in our own interest, while likewise proclaiming our supremacy or specialness. The unremitting conflict and oppression of history are inevitable byproducts of confining and killing animals for food, as is the male role model of macho toughness that is required of both the professional animal killer, herder, and the soldier. If we desire to eat animals, this suffering is the price we must pay. Work as joy, work as burden. The progressive voices of the left, while often criticizing conventional science and religion, and even questioning our rampant exploitation of nature and the domination of the feminine, have so far almost completely failed to see the connection between the core ritual of our herding culture, eating animals, and our destructive values and institutions. Whether we're of the right, left, or in between, we all agree to ignore this basic causal root of our problems. For example, in his book, The Reinvention of Work, Progressive theologian and priest Matthew Fox probes deeply into the values and beliefs that underlie our experience of work and our attitudes toward it. Drawing upon a wide range of scriptures, including the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Tao Te Ching, as well as writings by illumined poets and saints like Kabir, Rumi, Rilke, St. Francis, Hildegard of Bingen, Meister Eckhart, and the more modern voices of Thomas Berry, E.F. Schumacher, and Theodore Roszak, he passionately argues that work is fundamentally spiritual. If we look around us, he says, to the cosmos, to our earth, and to nature and animals, we find an infinity of action unfolding continually, with every part playing its assigned and vital role. Every part, every cell, plant, animal, planet, and star has a function to fulfill in the larger unfolding, and this is its work. Fox argues that to do this work is to participate in the becoming of the infinite universe, and that this is both sacred and ecstatic. All of creation, he writes, quote, exists because of the sheer joy of God. The work of creation was a work of joy whose whole purpose was to bring more joy into existence. This not only gives us permission to find joy in work, but charges us with a responsibility to do so. Joy is an essential source of motivation in our work. End quote. Fox recognizes, however, that there is a big problem for work for us humans, noting that over 1 billion of us are actually unemployed. If we look about us in nature, we see that every being is working and fulfilling its purpose, and it is only humans who are unemployed, underemployed, overworked, or unable or unwilling to work. We are the only species to enslave other species for food, to drink milk as adults, and to view work as disagreeable and try to avoid it. Why is this? Predictably, Fox blames our dissatisfaction with work on the disconnection from nature and spirituality caused by the scientific and industrial revolutions, and urges us to become more creative, more loving, and more joyful in our work, to care more for the earth and each other, and to reinvent work as the joy it is meant to be, as the expression of our heart's purpose. What he does not articulate is that the fundamental and defining work of our herding culture is the brutal confining, mutilating, and killing of sensitive creatures. This is hardly a motivation for joy in working. This is the obvious but unrecognized and unarticulated inconsistency at the root of our dilemmas. Thousands of us starve to death daily. Millions of us labor like slaves for pennies a day in toxic factories producing consumerist junk. Millions more of us work as soldiers and agents of violence and fear, and it's rooted in our plates. The commodifying, confining, and killing of animals is a complete perversion of the word work as defined by Fox. Until our defining work is transformed from killing animals for food to protecting and caring for life, we will never reinvent work in our culture. We will only make technological progress that gives us the means to exploit animals, nature, and each other more efficiently and cruelly, and to eat more animal flesh, eggs, and dairy products than ever in recorded history. World peace and harmony require those of us in positions of power and affluence in the global village to stop dominating people, animals, and nature through our craving for animal foods. It's easy to forget that if we're reading these words, we are actually among the richest and most powerful people on this planet. Because of our relative wealth and power, our example, our voice, and our lifestyle can impact many people, either positively or negatively. We are thus obliged to honor this responsibility to our brothers and sisters. Resurrecting work. Because of the fundamentally violent nature of its defining work, herding and killing animals, our culture has a basic distaste for work itself. We all hear that working less is better than working more, and not working at all is best of all. The story we all learned in Genesis of being cast out of the garden is significant, for it was then that God punished us with enforced hard labor while we live on this earth. This metaphor, part of the herding mythos, is revealing, for it depicts work as a distasteful burden and attributes it to a divine edict that came with being thrown out of the garden. In the garden, we ate a completely plant-based diet, and there was no concept of work as a separate activity. We lived in harmony with animals, the earth, and each other, not killing them for food or competing with each other. Our work was our life, and it was joy, and all was, quote, very good. There was no work as separate activity, nor any concept of being saved, for we had not committed the original sin of seeing others as objects to be manipulated, used, and killed. Many other world mythologies also talk about a lost golden age of innocence and peace. Perhaps these stories, as Eisler and others suggest, are reminiscences of the ancient partnership cultures described by contemporary anthropologists before the hunting of large animals, herding, and the domination of animals and women. Returning to the garden of abundance, innocence, and natural blessedness has always been seen as the goal of religious yearning in the West. Yet to actually accomplish this, we must unseat the basic mythos of domination and exclusion that our culture propagates. In its heart of hearts, our culture longs to transcend itself as we ourselves do, and to return spiral-like to a time of connectedness, mercy, and creative joy. The seeds of this yearning are planted in our culture's heart and in our spiritual essence. The fall from grace, innocence, freedom, and mercy began when we ate of the fruit of the illusion of dualistic separatism and stopped showing mercy to those at our mercy. The fall came when we began commodifying animals. We can resurrect our work from defiling slavery to joyous participation. The path simply requires that we give the same opportunities to the animals who are at our mercy, release them from slavery, and grant them freedom to once again fully participate in the unfolding of their unique purpose and consciousness. What we would wish for ourselves, we must first give to others. This is, it seems, an everlasting spiritual principle. To resurrect work from the depths of the trivialization, dissatisfaction, and exploitation into which it has fallen will need a cultural shift far more radical than any currently proposed by the left or the right. We'll need a positive transformation of our relationship to those at our mercy, which means shifting from animal foods to plant foods, and from a mythos of death and domination to a mythos of life and co-creative participation. Anything less is mere irony and hypocrisy. As individuals, as a culture, and as a human family, we pay a remarkably steep price for work that is demeaning or destructive to others or ourselves. When we work primarily for money, we transgress against our spiritual purpose and sell our life energy and time, which is unfathomably precious. Spiritual traditions and teachings have all emphasized that each one of us has a unique purpose and mission in this life to unfold and fulfill, and that this is our work. Our work has to do with purifying and awakening our consciousness, contributing creatively to our community, and being the voice and hands that confer blessings on others. As we discover our calling and live it as fully as we can, we discover joy and meaning, and our life becomes precious and filled with blessings. Evolving and growing as individuals, we can authentically contribute to the evolution of our species, and there is enormous satisfaction in these efforts. If we fail to spend our time and energy in this activity, we become deeply frustrated and dissatisfied, no matter how wealthy or powerful we may be. And this frustration, pooling, collecting, and fermenting becomes bombs and bullets, toxic dumps and cancers, roving gangs and terrorists. Work, like birth and meals, is sacred, a sacrament, and by desecrating work with competitiveness, killing, cruelty, and exploitation, our herding culture has sown seeds that can only bear misery for everyone. In the current modern incarnation of the old, viciously dominating herding culture, displaying its values now in amplified high-tech form as fast food chains, mega cities, giant hog farms, floating slaughterhouses, nuclear warheads, and rampant injustice, inequality, and exploitation, the resurrection of work means first and foremost understanding the roots of domination in the commodification of animals for food, the key to reclaiming our birthright and harmony, hidden in the most obvious of places, our plates, requires, as appropriate to mythic wisdom, that for us to be free, we must first free those whom we chain. To reclaim our purpose, we must restore the purposes we have stolen from others. As we remove the violence from our daily meals, we will naturally increase our ability to heal our divisions, nurture our creativity and joy, restore beauty and gentleness, and be role models of sensitivity and compassion for our children. As we look more deeply at our food, the healing of our children can begin, and our work can be resurrected as an instrument for blessing and bringing joy and caring to our world.